Hello and welcome. Greetings from the Offensive Security Group here at Secure IT 360. Coming at you with a new episode of the Cyber Threat Perspective. It is Friday. It is time for our weekend review. And for those of you that are new, every week our Offensive Security Group gets together and kind of tracks and does research and analyzes what's kind of going on in the security world. And we'll bring that to you in various formats. So the idea being that you're a little bit more prepared tomorrow than you are today for your work in the cyber field. So today you've got myself, Brad, and Mr. Spencer here as well from the Secure IT 360 Cyber Security Group. Cool topics to talk about. Spencer, I'm going to pass it over to you and we can get rolling.
Yeah, awesome. Happy to be here again. Another week in review, another list of some interesting topics. We're going to be talking about adversary in the middle attacks targeting enterprise users of Microsoft's email services. We'll be talking about malware and deception at scale from a nice report from VirusTotal. And then we'll be rounding it out with a discussion about initial access brokers and how they are kind of the key to the rise in the ransomware attacks that we're seeing. So lots of good topics to talk about. No doubt one to listen to multiple times if you so fancy.
Right.
So the first topic is the adversary in the middle phishing campaigns that are apparently ongoing, according to Zscaler's threat research team called Threat Labs. So they've got a nice report that talks about this phishing campaign that is ongoing. It's capable of bypassing MFA and URL sandboxing or URL analysis and code sandboxing and things like that. And this article kind of describes the techniques that kind of modern day phishing threat actors are using for initial access or to further their end goal of things like business email compromise. They say in the research that was one of the primary goals is to obtain access to emails of executives and people high up in the company and use those access points or those email access to those emails to further their end goal of business email compromise. And what's interesting is kind of the way they're going about it, right? Traditionally with phishing, you know, we send a user a link, they click on it, they either enter their credentials or they download malware and then, you know, off we go. But technology's gotten better, right? We talked about this earlier today, Brad and I, you and I did, about how email sandboxing and email security solutions have gotten better, right? Yeah. They're doing URL analysis. They're exploding things in a sandbox, right? Attachments. They're looking at the reputation of a website. So a lot of things are happening with email security that's making it harder, which is great.
Yeah.
But we are seeing threat actors adopting new techniques and adapting, right? And this is one example of attackers using custom phishing kits that are able to proxy requests in order to steal MFA tokens and bypass MFA, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a really good article, a really good research by the Zscaler team that kind of indicates what phishing is starting to look like nowadays.
Yeah, and this just kind of bolsters the case for conditional access, right? Is and for those of you who aren't intimately familiar with that, it's basically just some user behavior add-ons that go along with authentication, right? So if I always log in from, in this case, Alabama, and then suddenly I log in from Zimbabwe, that's different and I'm going to get my access revoked. So, you know, this bolsters the case. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, isn't there a minimum license agreement you have to have with Microsoft in O365 to leverage conditional access? Or is that for all levels? I'm not sure.
I know you get different. I know there are additional things you get with Azure AD Premium, like P2 and things like that. I'm not sure of what level it is actually.
I'm pretty sure you don't get conditional access with the lower licenses. But the point that I'm getting at though is that these attackers kind of are taking it to the next level because they're defeating what we would traditionally have called blocking and tackling, which is turn on MFA, have complex passwords, et cetera, et cetera. Although you could make the case that proper email filtering is blocking and tackling. But the point being, though, that this is a pretty intuitive way, or not intuitive, it's a pretty inventive way to bypass MFA. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and what this kind of looks like under the surface is threat actors are using legitimate services like Code Sandbox, like Glitch, which are website hosting companies where you host your code or your website on a legitimate service. And now when that email security platform goes and scans that website or does analysis on the website, it looks like it's otherwise legitimate, right? Even though it has a lookalike, you know, login page on it. They'll use redirectors, right, through valid services like Snapchat and Google Ads services even to evade those URL analysis tools. So there's a lot of interesting things going on with these campaigns that make them successful. And kind of the TLDR of this to me comes down to testing your security, your email security platform to see if these kinds of things get past it. And then educating your users right on the red flags. When you go to a website and it looks like a login page, is it on, you know, Microsoft.glitch.com or is it, you know, actual Microsoft login page? Kind of teaching users to recognize what a legitimate login page looks like and what one lookalike is. And that can be difficult, right? It's hard because some of these websites, these mimics, these lookalike websites are really, really good.
Yeah, and what you're talking about there, you know, for those of you that haven't read this article, I encourage you to do so because it illustrates some interesting things. You know, coming from the financial security world, we were really strict about what external services we allowed business units to leverage. And one of the things that the bad guys are leveraging to kind of exfil credentials without triggering filtering is open redirects, right? And you have tons of vendors out there like Google, like in this case, DoubleClick.net and Snapchat that have open redirects and they don't care because in their mind, it presents no risk to them. The problem is it presents risk to you. And that's one of the reasons that we were so adamant about either requiring through vendor management, application penetration tests for any new software we procured, or performing our own penetration test on any new software that we procured. And we would find stuff like this. And you can make a really good case in this perfect example in the real world of leveraging a third party to exfil credentials. And so anyway, long story short about it is there is a reason that us in highly regulated and highly secured industries, we care about things like open redirect that other companies don't.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. And the article, like you said, it has some really interesting techniques and things to pay attention to. We will see these things increase. Attackers will find more creative ways to bypass URL filtering and sandboxing and all of those things to further their goals. So something to look at, definitely a really good article by the Zscaler threat research team.
Yeah, good stuff for sure. Cool. One last thing on that. There are, you know, when you read this article, and I really hope that you folks do, you should be asking yourself at every step of this chain, what are my controls, right? And you should have good answers for all of them. It's really a good gut check, in my opinion. Yeah. Sorry, continue on.
No problem at all. Yeah, it's really good. And we talked about this in another podcast today, but there's a lot of things you can do that are free, that are just time and your time and resources and a little bit of research to test these things. Go out, see, you know, you can use these open redirects to test against your own email system, right? There's tons of resources out there to help you do this and test these things for free and can find some of those low-hanging fruit gaps or vulnerabilities or missing controls. So really good stuff to do. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Cool. So the next article, the next report is from VirusTotal. And this is kind of a snapshot of their key findings of their report. But the reason I thought this was interesting was because malware is what we're experiencing right now is the proliferation of malware, right? And not just malware in a single language, we're seeing malware in Rust and in Nim and in Go and in Python and all a variety of different languages and a whole bunch that, you know, have yet to be discovered yet more broadly, right? And this is a really good article that kind of talks about what is malware, what does a typical malware payload look like nowadays? What are some of the strategies that malware developers are using to kind of hide their malware or to evade detection? Because these are things that we want to be looking for in our EDR products, in our alerting systems. We want to be building our detections out to find these things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this report describes different techniques used by malware to bypass defenses. And as you read through the report, you'll kind of notice a trend, right? And there's a couple key trends that I wanted to mention. This is one: malware is increasingly disguising itself as legitimate software, both in how it looks and how it functions. So the top three applications that are being kind of mimicked or masqueraded as are Skype, Adobe Acrobat, and VLC. So they're posing as those applications. So it tricks people into downloading them, using them. And the top three sites are WhatsApp, Instagram, and Amazon, right? So malware is trying to mimic legitimate sites and services and applications that users use. Pretty self-explanatory, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But that will continue to trend upward.
And ironically, three things that you should have blocked at your proxy, by the way.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
People don't need to be on Instagram at work, you know?
Yeah. I guess unless you work at Instagram, maybe.
Block it anyway. There might be some kickback, but it's fine.
Yeah, no, just block it all. Block Amazon, WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. You don't need it. The other thing I thought was interesting too is, so according to VirusTotal in their report here, they had 1 million signed malicious samples in the last year. So since 2021, 1 million signed samples. And according to the report, 87% of them had a valid signature when they were uploaded. So they had a valid signature on the suspicious sample when it was uploaded, which I thought was interesting and
scary.
Kind of leads to the next point too.
Yeah, that's scary to me, you know?
Yeah. And that kind of segues into the last thing, the last point of this section or this report is, and this was kind of hard to follow. We talked a lot about this before we started the podcast. Yeah. Was like, what does this mean? And what does this look like? And if you dig into the report, it kind of explains it a little bit better, but it's still kind of like this weird thing. So I'll try and explain what it is trying to say is that in 98% of the cases where VirusTotal observed an executable embedded a legitimate installer in its PE resources,
okay,
the sample was also malicious. So as it says, okay, in the report, these more sophisticated malware samples will use these legitimate installers as a resource in the malicious sample itself. They'll use it to kind of evade detection, right? And make it look like it's a normal application installer or a normal thing, like a Zoom, a Spotify, like it says there. They'll use that to kind of masquerade as a legitimate piece of software, but it's actually a malicious application or piece of software.
They could not have been less clear in their summary bullet point of this thing.
Yep.
Because when I actually read it for, you know, you and I talked about it, I came to an entirely different conclusion about what it means. And now reading this paragraph, I'm like, oh, so they're just rebundling Spotify and rolling in malicious code.
Yeah.
Like, dude, you could have said that in five words.
Yeah.
So VirusTotal will do better.
Yeah, and I think that's, it's kind of confusing because PE, portable executable, is not something that, you know, you don't pull somebody off the street or even in IT and be like, hey, what's a PE?
Right.
Right. So it's kind of confusing when you get into these malware development discussions. There's a lot of these languages that in words that are just words and they don't mean a whole lot to a lot of people.
Sure. Yeah. And I'd like to think I know something about some things, and that sentence, man, just had me really scratching my head, but this paragraph clears it up completely. And that's unsurprising. That's not a new technique, but I think that the sheer percentage is new.
Yeah.
Basically, that's all of them, you know, 98%. So,
yeah. Yeah. Quite a staggering amount. And it just points to the fact that, you know, gone are the days. Well, they're still around, right? But gone are the days of just dropping a piece of malware, and that's just all it does is it's malware, right? It's just a bad thing, right? We're seeing groups like Knotweed, like we talked about previously, use DLL sideloading, proxy loading, where they load their malicious DLL as a part of another legitimate DLL, right? Lockbit is using this technique the same way. So we're seeing kind of hijacking legitimate applications and using that as kind of a launching point for our malicious stuff.
Yeah. And this is a direct result of EDR, right? This is a direct result of strong endpoint protection because, you know, when you run something random that is, you know, first of all, you know, that it kind of executes outside the normal process of things, it's really easy to figure out. And so, you know, but if you ride in, whether it's side loading or whether it comes as an installer that looks legit, it's a little bit harder to figure out programmatically that this is in fact malicious. And at the very least, you'll give a SOC analyst pause. You're like, wow, this is, it actually installed Spotify. Like, is this really okay? And then you might miss that one little child process that spun off, you know, and made a few registry changes. So yeah, I mean, it's a logical next step in the cat and mouse game of what EDR is, I think.
I was literally just going to say that. I was going to say the cat and mouse game of, you know, antivirus came along. Like we got signatures for all these things. Antivirus adapted, right? They became a little bit more stealthy in the way that they behave, right? And how they were executed. And then EDR came along and it, you know, it detected a lot of those behaviors. And now we're seeing another proliferation of malware that's abusing things that EDR is just not inherently built for or wasn't initially built for. It's getting there, right? There are EDR products that are doing really well against these types of things. And they're getting better every day. But yeah, like you said, it's a cat and mouse game. It's the constant back and forth between offense and defense, attack and defend. And that's what we do too, is like, we don't get better as defenders unless we test those defenses with our offensive capabilities.
Agreed. Agree, man. Yeah. Good stuff.
Cool. So the last article is from Recorded Future, the Insect Group. And this is a report on initial access brokers and kind of how they operate, what they go after, how they use the dark web forums, you know, what their advertising tendencies look like, which I thought was interesting. So pretty interesting article. It's a really short read, but really good insight. Actually has screenshots from actual dark web forums. So, you know, they're actually getting in there and doing some nitty-gritty research on these things. A lot of these are Russian-based forums, so they're translating them in some cases. So good report, good research overall. It had a few key takeaways I think would be interesting to discuss in this.
Yeah, big shout out, by the way, to the Ents group at Recorded Future. So I was an early adopter, like a beta tester for Recorded Future, and they are hands down the rock stars of the threat intelligence world. I mean, we do partner with them, but I'm not saying it because of that. Like, I'm just a true believer in what they do. And they, at some point, some years ago, acquired, I call them Ents Group because, you know, I can't pronounce whatever it actually is, but they are amazing. Like, they have, you know, their fingers in every dark web forum, and they're just absolutely the pulse of what's really going on in the cyber criminal world. So yeah, check them out if you get a chance. They're just, they're literally the most underrated rock stars in threat intel for sure.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. So a couple things that I thought were interesting were, we're not necessarily surprised to anyone kind of following along and paying attention to these kinds of things, but the most common method by which threat actors obtain access is through the use of compromised credentials. And they do that
just talked about that 2 hours ago.
Just talked about it. But compromised credentials, right? And they do that through malware that is a keylogger. It steals information. They call them info stealers. But then they sell those credentials on the dark web, right? Or in special access sources, like it says here, like Telegram channels or these special groups. Mm-hmm. So these initial access brokers will, you know, perform these attacks, gain access to environments, obtain credentials, deploy malware to steal credentials, and then they'll sell those to ransomware groups or to other threat actors. And kind of the key things, or the most common things that they're after, are credential pairs for things like VPN, RDP, Citrix gateways, web apps, content management systems, webmail. You know, a lot of this stuff we'll talk about time and time again whenever we talk about these topics. But these are things that are highly sought after by these groups, and especially things like ESXi root accounts or access, Active Directory accounts, but even things like zero days or code injection points, which you might not think would be something that is kind of being bought and sold. But it turns out that is actually something that initial access brokers mm-hmm. will go after and look to sell on these dark web forums.
Interesting. And like, I guess it shouldn't be surprising, but at least me personally, I'm always impressed with the organization of the cyber criminals in this regard, and how much their ecosystem mimics like traditional economic free market theory. I guess it's organic, so it shouldn't surprise me that this happens even in this type of vertical, but it's just fascinating to me for sure.
Yep. Definitely. And you know, the way that the initial access brokers advertise their wares, or you know, the things that they've gotten access mm-hmm. to is quite interesting too. They'll share the victim country, the revenue, the industry, the type of access. They'll have all these parameters for things that, you know, they're looking to either sell or obtain. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting as well. And you can kind of incorporate that in your threat model. If you're able to get this type of threat intelligence, you can kind of look at what groups are after what, which can kind of help kind of gauge what you need to do and prepare for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with that. That's a really good perspective. That I am a big fan of is literally leveraging something like this report to check yourself. You know, do I fit in the parameters of what these people are looking for from a victim perspective? And if I do my defenses match up at least reasonably well to their TTPs, which are generally known, by the way?
Yep. Yeah. For example, like Black Matter, is supposedly looking for corporations, in, you know, various countries, but they're not looking for, companies in the industries of medicine or state institutions, which right. may or may not end up being the case, right? They might go after those anyways, but according to, you know, what they're advertising for, this is, you know, the kind of thing that you can see on the dark web forums that they're advertising for, that initial access brokers will take and they'll go after and they'll target these types of organizations.
Yeah. Now I'm super fascinated with like, okay, why not medicine? Right. Is that a moral thing? I can imagine why not state institutions, right? Because what a great way to bring the wrath of an entire country upon your face. But the hospital thing is interesting to me.
Yeah, I think some groups have actually said, come out and said it's for moral reasons. They don't want to attack
right.
infrastructure or harm human life or things like that. But who knew? You know, ransomware groups had a moral compass, right? Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. Honor among thieves.
I guess so.
Or something. Trademark TM. Anyway, who knows, man? That's just neat. It's just fascinating stuff.
Yep.
Cool. That kind of wraps things up. That's all we have for you guys today. If you did enjoy this episode, or if you got value from it, the best thing you can do to help us out is share it with your friends. Give us a rating on however you are consuming this, whatever platform or channel that might be. And like, subscribe, follow, whatever it is. And we got some really good stuff over at our blog at offsec.blog if you want to check us out. And we will see you next week. Have a good one.